Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. There's absolutely no doubt that religious sentiment, I'll just use that very general term, is wide in America. There's no doubt about that. And there's all kind of polling data that looks at that religious sentiment in the wide sense. But if we think about it in terms of its depth, how deep does it go? What kind of questions do religion polls need to be asking to get an accurate picture of both the state, the snapshot of American religion, but also the trends in American religion? Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 5th, to talk about important questions for religion polling, Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here again.
Why were doctrinal questions, I think we call them doctrinal questions, so important to the late religion poller George Gallup?
Well, Gallup was always fascinated with one reality in American life, which was that certain basic statistics about religion, how often people claimed they went to church, how many people say they believe in God, how many people say they pray every day or every week or whatever, the respect they say they have for the Bible. He was intrigued that the statistics in the American landscape of religion on those types of questions were just so amazingly consistent. It was his father at the Gallup Poll Organization who started asking some of those questions. And the late George Gallup Jr. always insisted that when he was helping run the company or running the company, he insisted that those questions always be repeated because he wanted to be able to show the consistency of those numbers. I mean, there's about 38-42% of Americans who claim they go to church, you know, at least once a week or once a month, or are regular churchgoers or regular worship attenders. And that's just been there forever. And Gallup was fascinated by that. Yet at the same time, kind of like, you know, a man who's watching a slow-motion train wreck, he was fascinated at how much the changes in American behavior and how Americans actually lived their lives when you pushed them into the details. I mean, like, you know, the old journalism saying, follow the money, you know, and you find out where things happen. You know, he would say, well, you follow the money on religion. You follow the time people spend. You move past the vague and you ask them the specifics, and you find out that Americans are not nearly as religious in practice as they might claim they are. So Gallup was always fascinated with two kinds of questions. One was the broadly stated basic, I say I believe this question. But then inside that, he always wanted to ask, how did that affect people's time, their money, how they made their decisions? And he also found that people were kind of vaguely religious, and when you ask them for specific beliefs, Americans, quite frankly, just didn't sweat the details. So that's why you ask doctrinal questions in particular, as well as you ask practical, day-to-day, lifestyle questions. You're trying to find out what the reality is inside those big, consistent numbers about Americans and religion.
So you're trying to tease apart how deep that consistency is, as well as how broad?
Right. In other words, is religion essentially like an oil slick in American society? Billy Graham has said for years, and he said this once to me in an interview, that he actually thought it was hard to do evangelism in the American Bible Belt. He said because everybody there had already been inoculated. In other words, I mean, to some degree, it was harder to preach a living faith to people who thought they already had enough than it was to preach the gospel in London or New York or some other place where people perceived themselves as being secular, and you were kind of asking them something countercultural. Well, that's exactly what Gallup is saying as well. Gallup was fascinated with the process of trying to find out what the reality was inside some of those big, familiar, comforting numbers.
You also have what your colleagues have coined a set of questions, the TMAT trio.
The TMAT trio, right.
What are those questions, and why do they elucidate the very kind of issue that you're talking about here?
Well, I wrote a column last week about that for Universal because something very interesting happened. Those questions grew out of some of my early conversations with George Gallup Jr., who I probably interviewed at least five times over about a 20-year period of time. And, you know, when you get that done with an interview and you sit around and you kind of start talking, in effect, you start talking shop. And Gallup was fascinated with my three questions. And the three questions are, number one is, did the resurrection really happen? Was this a real event in real time? The second question was Jesus speaking the truth, literally, when he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. Is salvation through Jesus alone? In other words, the universalism question. And the third question, and this one really intrigued him, I worded it, is sex outside of marriage a sin? Now notice I didn't ask any, that's not a political question. It's a doctrinal question. And he thought that was fascinating because to some degree it was a question that everybody now thinks of this in political terms because of the same-sex marriage issue, because of premarital sex, adultery, divorce rates, all that stuff. To some degree this has become a public square issue, but it's also a doctrinal issue. Well, George and I talked about those questions a couple of times, and I've talked to other pollsters about them as well. Well, a funny thing happened last spring. Ed Setzer of the Lifeway Research branch of the kind of the Kingdom of the Southern Baptist Convention, Lifeway, with my permission, I agreed to this apparently years ago, kind of joking after an interview, he took my TMAT trio questions and wrote them into a actual American survey to find out what Americans believe. This was a doctrinal survey done for Ligonier Ministries in Orlando. And I would, of course, he immediately let me know how my three questions had come out. And I don't have all the results in front of me, but once again, what you find out is that people affirm the resurrection, broadly stated. They're a little bit nervous about this whole thing about salvation can only be found one way. But then when you ask them, is sex outside of marriage a sin? Americans back way off. The minute you actually try to get them to apply a doctrine to a very specific situation now, where they're going to clash with their culture. They're going to clash with the radical individualism of their culture, and people get really nervous at that point, and that you just watch the numbers collapse.
So you're obviously gratified to see that they're employing your trio of questions. What, and you've actually written most recently about some of the results that came out of
right.
that survey. What do you see in those results?
Well, it's what I just said. You see exactly what George Gallup always talked about. When you state a religious question broadly, like the resurrection, you tend to get lots of people who say, oh, yeah. Then you ask about is salvation through Christ alone, and all of a sudden people are kind of, they stop and think about it. In fact, let's see, I think I have that number in front of me. This gets down into the questions about heaven and hell. A lot of Americans, 67% of Americans believe in heaven, 61% believe in hell. But when you get to it, like, how do you get to heaven? 55% of mainline Protestants and 67% of Catholics believe that there are multiple ways to find salvation in this life. In other words, they kind of deny the universal requirement of faith in Jesus Christ. Only, by the way, there are 19% of evangelicals who believe there are multiple ways to heaven, which I thought that was interesting. I don't know what I thought that number would be. You get into other questions about biblical authority. 48% of Americans say the Bible is the Word of God, but then 45% said scriptures are written for every person to interpret as he or she sees fit. So the nation is pretty much split 50-50 on what kind of authority the Bible has at all. And you get into these questions, and what you find is an America that once again kind of wants to claim a Christian identity, but the minute you ask the details, people start scrambling and hiding. And Gallup was convinced that that was the case, and with every decade that went by, more and more and more poll data came out that would show that that was the case. And this latest study from Lifeway is just packed with that kind of material. Just to give you one other example, Ed Stetzer said that when you get the impression of how Americans think you get saved, you basically, Americans don't think of themselves as sinners. They think they sin maybe a little bit, but they basically think they're all right. And when you push Americans, they basically think you earn your way to heaven just by being basically good, which, you know, is a works theology that has nothing to do whatsoever with historic Christianity. But that's what Americans think Christianity is.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 5th. We're talking about important questions for religion polling. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about moralistic therapeutic deism, that basically good theology. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas; Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California; Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming; Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas; Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming; Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California; St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa; Redeemer Lutheran, Caquabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada; St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin; and St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms, everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born. Good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. AdCrucem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're talking with Terry Mattingly. He is author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org about important questions for religion polling. You were talking before about if you go into the narrow depths of the religious landscape in America, you discover that a lot of these nominal Christians believe in kind of a basically good theology. They're basically good, and they square themselves with God through works. Does that have anything to do with that moralistic therapeutic deism that research has shown is infecting so many millennials today?
Right. No, that's exactly what that's all about. It's important to kind of see how Gallup and Stetzer and others kind of view the American population when it comes to religion, to really understand what's going on. I think you and I have talked about this before in the work of a pollster named John Green. Stetzer and Lifeway sees America as probably about 20 to 25% of Americans are convictional believers, in their opinion, people who are actually trying to live their faith out in daily life. And then in the middle of the American public, they see about a 50% of the population that he calls the mushy middle. And the mushy middle breaks down into two different groups of people. About 25%, he said, are people that basically go to church once or twice a year. They show up for the occasional funeral or whatever. And he calls these congregational Christians. And then the other 25% in the mushy middle, he calls cultural Christians. They're not even going to church anymore, but they still conceive of themselves as Christian. This leads to what I think is one of the most fascinating answers in this entire poll, and I'm looking frantically to see if I can find the statistic for it. Here it is. 82% of the people polled in America said that the church has no authority over them to declare I am or am not a Christian. 82%. Which is, I just find that fascinating. That is a radical individualism, which has a lot more to do with how Americans view themselves in kind of a pull yourself up by your bootstraps, democratic values society, than it has to do with the actual vision of ancient Christianity at all.
I mean, that's not just made in America religion. That's DIY religion.
Yeah. So if you've got 25% of the people who are really trying to live their faith, 25% who go to church once or twice a year, and they kind of, yeah, like, oh, I go to First Baptist, but they don't say how often they go to First Baptist. You got 25% who are just basically cultural Christian. The news that's causing headlines, and this grew out of a Pewform study that you and I have talked about before from 2 years ago, which is the growth of the group that everybody calls the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, as opposed to the N-U-N-E-S, N-U-N-S. A bad pun there, but I apologize, it's radio, and we have to be careful with things like that. The nuns are growing, which is where we get to the point that I kind of like to, you know, for readers and listeners to think about. If Americans are basically liberal Christians, why aren't liberal Christian churches growing? Instead, we have more and more people vanishing out of the nominals, the mushy middle. That's who's ending up in the nuns category. Gallup used to point this out over and over, and Stetzer did as well, and John Green has done it in interviews with me as well, that 20 to 25% of convictionals, they're not going anywhere. That group isn't shrinking. The people who are actually committed to living a Christian faith or Jewish faith or people who are committed to practicing their religion, that percentage of the American population is amazingly stable. What's vanishing now is nominal, half-hearted religious belief in the middle is where the numbers are shrinking. And those are the people that are bleeding out to the doctrinal left, so to speak. And they're either becoming secular, or they're becoming vaguely spiritual, or they're becoming these people that everybody calls the religiously non-affiliated. They just don't really claim anything. That's the part of American society that's growing. But they're not people who would be interested in going to a liberal church, because they're just not interested in church at all. They're vaguely spiritual. And if you're vaguely spiritual, why do you need a specific liberalism any more than you need a specific orthodoxy? Does that make sense? You're not into specifics. If the church has no authority, why show up on Sunday, miss the first part of the NFL game, and give them some money? Why support that institution if you're totally on your own? I find this intriguing, and this addresses what I think has been one of the great curiosities of my, you know, like 30 to 40 years covering religion in America, which is, if Americans essentially are watered down liberal Christians, why aren't liberal churches growing? And this is kind of the answer. They're bleeding out of the nominals and into the unaffiliateds altogether. They just don't do the institutional thing at all.
Is this why you've pointed out many times in conversations that when doing religion polling, it is absolutely vital that you determine kind of who you're asking these questions in terms of church attendance for sacramental churches,
right.
Participation
yeah.
in the sacramental life of the church?
Yeah, and we're back to the specific doctrinal questions inside the vaguely defined groups. And I think this is different for everybody. I believe the question for Roman Catholics is not how often you go to Mass, it's how often you go to confession. Within Judaism, there are specific questions about practice that will immediately separate the practicing, worshiping Jews away from the cultural Jewish identification crowd. I'm sure there are questions within Islam or any other faith where you could probe what George Gallup Jr. was probing. Once you get inside the vague identity, who are the people who are practicing the specifics? And what Setzer, Green, and George Gallup Jr. have really started to find out now is that the people who believe the specifics of their faith are also the people who practice the faith. That doctrinal orthodoxy goes along with an orthodoxy of practice. That to some degree, it matters what people believe and what they don't believe. It does have something to do with how they live.
With all that said, Terry, it sounds like your assessment of religion polling, at least in the cases of Gallup and the others, is that we have, to this point, we have relatively good data. They're giving us good data. How are the data being read, especially by the media?
Well, we have broad data, and then we have lots of questions being asked about these kinds of issues stated more as political wordings. In other words, you're more likely to have pollsters today ask Americans if they believe in same-sex marriage than ask them if they believe sex before marriage is sin, period. In other words, American pollsters are always more interested in politics than they are in the specifics of religion. And that's why, to call his name again, that's why the late George Gallup Jr. was so important. I mean, there is no bigger brand name in the world of polling than Gallup. And yet here was a man who himself was a churchman, a faithful churchman, who really thought religious beliefs mattered and steered his company in that direction. Without that example from Gallup through the years, I don't know if we would have a Pew Forum on religion and public life today, doing extensive surveys on the rise of Pentecostals in world Christianity and the struggles for faith of American Latinos in the second generation, and these kinds of specific questions that I think matter so much to understanding our society. So we are getting some good questions asked. Only now, I think, are people beginning to realize maybe we stop asking these questions like we're in a ballot box on election day, and maybe it's time to ask these questions like we're on our knees in a pew and really look at it from the perspective of religious faith and practice and ask people religion questions instead of trying to turn everything into politics. And we're beginning to get a few questions like that asked, and I applaud Lifeway for doing this specific study, and I hope there are more like it. I would like to know a whole lot more about the religious beliefs of liberal Christians who actually are faithful, church-going people, yet are doctrinally liberal. I don't think we know hardly anything about them. The last 20 to 30 years of American life have been dominated by evangelicals and the religious right. I don't think we know anything about the religious left in terms of their motivations, where their beliefs come from. There aren't many of them. We know that. We know they're shrinking. Do we know why some of those people are bleeding out into nominalism and from that over into religiously unaffiliated? What's going on in liberal Christian belief is a question that I think pollsters need to go after big time.
Hey, before I let you go, Terry, this is just personal curiosity. Your kind of religion desk, religion beat take on the results of the midterm elections. How would you put it in a nutshell for me?
Well, this was supposedly an election where very few people talked about the cultural issues, the culture war issues. Yet, everybody agreed. You know, the Republicans are running away from the religious right. They're going libertarian, etc. Yet, Democrats in several key locations pushed this whole image of the war on women. And when you dig inside the war on women, it all really boils down to abortion, which means I'm very anxious to look at the numbers in the Texas gubernatorial race, where Wendy Davis, of course, was the face in the running shoes of the war on women movement, so to speak, yet she lost big time. I saw one statistic last night. She lost the women's vote in Texas by at least 5 to 6 points, according to the early exits and stuff. I'm really interested in unpacking the numbers there. Colorado was another state where it was just all about abortion rights. And then a Republican won and beat an incumbent. I have no idea what's going on in Maryland, but you had a lot of African-American voters booing Barack Obama and walking out of one of his speeches recently. And then Obama's hand, you know, his anointed candidate to be the governor of Maryland in one of the biggest shocks of last night, that young, brilliant African-American lost. I'd love to know what the turnout was in African-American churches and whether that has anything to do with the direction the country's gone on social and moral and religious liberty issues. I've got more questions for you than I've got answers, but listeners may just want to call up a search for war on women, comma, religion, comma, Texas, for example, and see what results from a search like that. I think we're going to be seeing some interesting numbers.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, it's always a pleasure, and thank you again.
Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Pastor Will Wheaton about different names for the Lord's Supper. We're going to begin a series with him on that, talking about terms like the Eucharist, the familiar ones, the Lord's Supper, that's one of the terms. Each one of these terms says something a little different about the Lord's Supper, confesses the Lord's Supper, the presence of Christ, in a slightly different way. We have Holy Communion, Sacrament of the Altar, the Body and Blood of Christ. There are more, and we'll begin our series on the various names for the Lord's Supper with Pastor Will Wheaton tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You don't have to live in the St. Louis area to take advantage of the great deals at Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale. You can purchase resources online, November 3rd through the 10th at cph.org. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. during the Concordia Publishing House's online warehouse sale, November 3rd through the 10th, cph.org. Shop online, cph.org.